We still have one missing that we're going to try to get something recorded on. And technically, what I'm going to cover today is the end of the stuff that's in the curriculum book that we purchased, that Nate and I have been following throughout the summer in these classes. Today we're going to be looking at detecting fallacies. And basically, this is just going to be some review and some practice, okay? And then the next two Sundays, because we've had a lot of questions, a couple people have come up and wanted some, like, practical theological examples type things, okay? And so next week, I'm going to teach again, the next 2 weeks, and I'm going to be kind of addressing dispensational fallacies related to dispensationalism. In other words, things people say to be critical of dispensationalism. Maybe I might even get into specifically the rapture. We'll just kind of have to see how time goes, and then try to take some of the things that we've learned throughout the summer and, like, apply them to these different topics. So I'm going to do that next week, and then the following week, the first Sunday in October. And then Nate is going to teach on October 12th, and he's going to kind of maybe cover some more things that I don't cover. And then that would be, like, the final lesson. So we'd end up with, like, somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 23, 24 lessons total in this series, if we count one that's missing that we need to add. So about 23 lessons right in there. And then the next Sunday would be the Bible conference. So we don't have class anyway that Sunday. And then the last Sunday in October then is the 26th, I believe. I'm going to be restarting the class on the Bible. Okay? So some of you have missed that class. We will be getting to that, but I didn't want to. I'm also going to be missing a Sunday in October when Nate's teaching on October 12th, and so I didn't want to, like, start and then have to stop right away and that sort of thing. So we'll be good, and I think we'll be able to get into some practical examples. So next Sunday I'm going to be talking about dispensational straw men, stuff people say to straw man against dispensational truth, and will be and misuse of history, chronological snobbery, some of these types of things that we've been sort of talking about. So what we want to get into today is detecting fallacies. And I don't have a lot of new ground to cover here. I'm following very closely the lesson as it's laid out in the curriculum book. But we're going to be looking at a lot of examples and doing some review and testing. Not like a test where you're going to be graded, although it would be interesting to give that test. We're not going to do that, but and if there's time left, I've got a couple other sort of miscellaneous examples of some arguments that we could look at, okay? So, getting into the notes, there's really nothing to fill in the blank this time, just because it's not super long, okay? So, detecting fallacies. So, the technique for identifying informal fallacies is the same as identifying any kind of reasoning. You must ask two questions about the person doing the arguing. So, two things that you're going to want to ask basically all the time. If you're dealing with somebody that's making an argument, two things that are going to be practical for you to ask every time is, number one, what are they trying to prove? All right, what is it that they're wanting me to agree with? What are they trying to prove? What is it that they want me to give mental assent to? That would be the first question. And then the second question is, how are they trying to prove it? What means, what lines of reasoning, what argumentation are they marshaling to try to prove the thing that they're wanting you to agree with? Okay? So I think these are two helpful questions, basically, in anything that you're going to encounter. I know that portions of this logic class might have been a little bit sort of heady and theory and so forth. They were necessary to cover, but they weren't necessarily things you're going to have time to do operationally when you're dealing with people. Okay? These two questions are highly practical that you can use all the time, anytime you're listening to something, reading something, engaging with something or somebody. Okay? So they are, again, what is he trying to prove, and how is he trying to prove it, okay? So we're going to look at an example here. So this is an example from a Bertrand Russell, who's a famous atheist, okay? He has an essay titled, Why I'm Not a Christian. This is the title of his essay, and this is just a paragraph, a short excerpt from that I'm going to read to you that we're going to kind of use as a test case for these questions, okay? So let's read this. Okay? Religion is based, I think, primarily and mainly on fear. It is partly the terror of the unknown and partly, as I have said, the wish to feel that you have kind of an elder brother who will stand by you in all your troubles and disputes. Fear is the basis of the whole thing. Fear, the mysterious fear of defeat, fear of death. Okay? So, let's apply these questions. So the first question then is, what do we think Russell is trying to prove in this excerpt from his piece, Why I'm Not a Christian? What is he trying to prove? What is he trying to argue here in these three lines of this quotation? Okay, so this is my question to you guys for you to think about this. So, as you read this, what strikes you? What do you think Russell is trying to prove or argue for? Okay, the reason people choose religion.
Which is fear.
Which he thinks is fear. Any other thoughts?
That there is no absolute authority.
Yeah, I think he is saying, obviously is ultimately saying that. Do you think, Bart, he's saying that specifically in this quote?
Well, I think he's implying it because he doesn't believe there's a God, so there's no order to anything, so he's got his own ideas.
The elder brother.
How many of you take that elder brother? Where'd that go?
Third.
Kind of an elder brother. How many of you take that to be somewhat of a sarcastic retort, smear? You know, all you fools that believe you got to have a sky fairy or something, you know, that sort of a thing. All right. Any other thoughts on what is he trying to prove? So what did you say again?
He's trying to prove that people choose religion based on fear.
Okay, trying to prove people choose religion based on fear. Mike?
I think he's trying to justify his own belief.
Yeah.
And saying you have any evidence, really. He's just saying why he believes what he believes. But he doesn't put forth any really evidence.
Okay, yeah.
I noticed that he... And maybe that's because he doesn't believe that but a lot of times with religion, one of the biggest fears is hell. He doesn't mention hell because maybe he says, well, there is no heaven and hell. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that's why he doesn't mention it.
It's funny he brings up fear, but he doesn't mention eternal punishment.
Yeah.
He talks about different types of fear, different categories of fear, but he never talks about ultimate fear, if you will, of eternal punishment or that kind of a thing.
That's religion.
Yeah, so that's the thing too.
He's
arguing against what he perceives to be what?
Religion.
Now let me just be clear with you. I'm against religion for religion's sake too. If religion is man's effort to try to reach or appease God through his own works, merit, or effort, then I'm against that too, right? But no, religion is based, I think, primarily and mainly on fear. So, I think that's right. His main argument is that religion is based on, he believes, the main reason people are religious is because they fear. But then he leaves out, at least from this portion, and admittedly we're only looking at this portion, he leaves out anything regarding, like, eternal punishment or the ultimate punishment. Any other thoughts on what we think he's trying to prove?
Well, it seems like his ultimate point is that religion is false.
And his main, okay, so then that brings up, you've kind of already mentioned it, but how is he trying to prove that?
He hasn't gotten to that point yet, but I think partly the terror of the unknown,
right,
is fuel. I reject that because you can look around at creation and it's ordered and it's beautiful. And the only fear is if you're not protected by something that might eat you or kill you, but other than that, I mean, unless other humans are attacking you, it's a beautiful place to live.
Okay. Any other thoughts, comments, or observations before we move on?
He's just trying to use emotion.
There is emotion here. I mean, he's not really making any sort of factual appeal. Amy?
The wish to feel. And you have kind of an elder brother who will stand by you in all your troubles.
I think two, to me, there would be two things. There would be, fear stands out as a primary one, but is he also tapping into like this sort of emotional felt need to feel like you're not alone?
Yeah.
Okay, Nate, what do you want to say?
I mean, in one sense, though, he's not completely wrong. Does common human experience, do we have that feeling of need of forgiveness or a need of redemption or a need of companionship and love and protection and everything else? So, like, that is a shared common experience of humanity. So, he's not wholly inaccurate as far as he's understanding that all humans feel certain ways. Right.
Yeah, so he's identifying what we might argue is a basic human need.
Right.
And he's therefore seeming to argue that, well, out of this human need, man sort of invented religion.
Right. Right.
If it weren't for these, if it weren't for fear and this need, felt need for connection, emotion, whatever, then people wouldn't be religious, is essentially what he's saying, at least the way I understand it. Now, let's go to the next point. So this is what the curriculum book says, okay? They say that he's attempting to identify the source of the Christian faith. And if you go with what the curriculum book says, then again, I think you're back to the same two things that we just identified. People are being Christian out of fear, number one, and number two, a need for some sort of emotional connection with other beings. Agreed? Okay.
Why does it have to be just Christian?
I would agree with you. Okay, the curriculum book is identifying the Christian faith because they're writing the book from a Christian point of view. But this is a generic statement to me for any religion, right? So he's a secularist. He's a naturalist. You know, he's an atheist. But I would argue that that's a belief system in and of itself and is arguably its own religion. There's a group here in West Michigan called the Center for Inquiry. You ever heard of them? The Center for Inquiry is basically an atheist church. It's a bunch of atheists. They get together. They give lectures. They have fellowship dinners. They get together at the bar and they drink beer and they talk about how God doesn't exist. It's basically church for atheists. Okay? And is atheism a religion in the sense that it requires faith that God does not exist?
Greater faith.
Okay? So I would argue greater faith. We have a book on my shelf at home, and we have a copy of it here in the library, if you want to check it out, called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. It's probably my favorite apologetic book. Just the way it's laid out and the way that they walk you through the different arguments and things that people will say. I've read through that book multiple times and used it quite often when I've talked to people. Okay, but so the curriculum book says it's the Christian faith, but I think you could apply it to any religion in general. Okay, so apparently he thinks, referring to Russell, there's a typo here, I apologize. Apparently he thinks he can say why someone believes, there's a lot of typos here.
Yeah.
Sorry. Basically, he's saying he can identify why Christianity must not be true, and he's basing it out of, you know, this felt need and this emotion. I apologize for the typos. We can readily spot this as an extended bulwerism. This is what the book says. And I gave you the definition there. A rhetorical fallacy where someone dismisses an argument by attacking the arguer's motives or psychological background rather than addressing the argument's merits, right? So when he gets into the whole thing about, let me read it to you again, the line that you guys already talked about, the wish to feel that you have kind of an elder brother who will stand by you, is that emotionalism? Is that an appeal to emotion? The only reason that you people believe this religion stuff is because you have this felt need to believe that you're not alone. If you were really a true, if you were really a courageous person like myself, you would be okay with belief that there's nothing. It's essentially what he's saying, right? Okay. So, I don't know. Do we agree with the book that this is a bulwerism?
I can see their argument.
There's several things that are kind of all built together to make it. So, I mean, you have obviously this is question banking. Because essentially what he's saying is, okay,
already assuming there is no religion, but I do have to have an answer for why it exists. So therefore, it has to go the other way around. They had a self-need, therefore they created a religion. Rather than any religion is true, and therefore we have the self-need.
Rather than God like creating humans, and therefore humans have a felt need because there's a creator who made them,
right.
He is begging the question.
So it is question begging in that way. And yeah, it definitely is a vulgarism because, yeah, he's saying, based on his presuppositions, the only reason you believe this is because you have this psychological deficiency to be protected by a big brother.
Right. So. So the key questions, again, to remember all the time is, what is being argued and how is it being argued? Now, I have a list here. I'm going to leave this on the screen. I gave it to you in the notes. This is just a quick run through of what we've looked at over the last maybe three or four lessons. Okay. So in our list of fallacies that we've talked about in the last three lessons, we have ipsy dixit appeal to authority. Okay. That's one of the arguments that we've seen, one of the fallacies. We have ad populum, appeal to the masses. Third, we have ad baculum to the stick, i.e. threats, right? You know, you better do this or else kind of arguments, all right? Number four, ad hominem, attacking a person. Number five, we've got vulgarism, genetic fallacy, like we just saw with Russell. Six, tu quoque, you do it too. Remember, this is the one where, well, you do it, Dad. Okay. Ad ignoratium, yes? All right. Lack of information. So I've given you just a little clue, again, a reminder about what each one of these is. Chronological snobbery, I didn't give you one there because that's pretty obvious. That's a bias towards more recent things and looking down your nose at people from bygone ages or generations. Equivocation, confuse the real issue with multiple vague or unclear meanings. We saw assent, altered meaning through changed emphasis. Accent, I said that wrong, right? Just help me out with pronunciation.
Amphiboly,
vagueness of grammar alters meaning. Composition, transferring attributes from parts to the whole. Division, transferring attributes from whole to the part. Circular reasoning, assuming what you're trying to prove. Post hoc, ergo, propter hoc, assuming a sequence in time implies cause and effect. Either or, false dilemmas, talked about those last week. Complex question that excludes a legitimate response. We looked at those last week. And a prioriism. Yes?
Yep.
Amen. Okay? Hasty generalization. So, if you turn to the next page in your notes, if you're not already there, page 2, you will see that there are 30 samples here. 30 or 20? I can't remember. 20. There are 20 examples of these types of arguments. Okay? So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave these up here on the screen. All right? And I think what I want is I'm going to give you guys maybe 7 to 10 minutes, let's say, and I want you to work with each other in your groups where you're sitting at trying to identify these, which fallacy from the list does each one of these commit, all right? So read the directions. Identify the fallacies made in the examples below. They can be any of the fallacies of distraction, ambiguity, or form. And so that's obviously the list that I've got here and that I also put for you there in the notes, okay? So what I think I want to do is I want to give you some time to just kind of chat with each other, work together on trying to identify these fallacies, and then after maybe 10 minutes, we'll go through all of them together and make sure that we all have the correct answers. Does that make sense? So a little bit of like a workshop time here. Chat with each other about which one of these fallacies you think is being committed. I will step aside and leave this up here for your reference.
So that's Also,
All right, that was 10 minutes. How many of you, we can maybe do the, how many want more time? Okay. We'll go 5 more minutes, and then wherever it's not done, we'll do together. So if this were my class, I'd be walking around right now making sure everyone's on task. You can see him right here in the back row. Mr. Ross. I don't understand ad baculum. If you were teaching this to high school kids, though, you probably wouldn't use the Latin words. You'd probably just teach appeal to authority, appeal to the masses. Mr. Ross, my favorite is attacking the person.
Yeah, that's
kind of
great.
Okay.
Let's try it.
Minutes. Appreciate you guys being good sports about this. So let's see where we're at on these, and we'll just start going through them. Some of them we maybe are just going to go together. Okay. For the benefit of those who are watching on the recording, I'm going to read each one of these out loud, and then we can talk through what we think the fallacy is. Okay. So, number one, the Facebook post read, "If you don't share this, you may lose your job in an accident or go bald." The Facebook post read, "If you don't share this, you may lose your job in an accident or go bald." What do we think the fallacy is for number one?
Ad baculum.
Ad baculum, okay? To the stick, i.e. threats. I see this almost every day on Facebook. If you want God to bless you, you will share this post. Or, if you don't want something bad to happen to you, then, you know, you'll share this with 10 people. Okay? I just ignore all that stuff because it's silly. But that's ad baculum, right? That's to the stick. That's a threat. If you don't do this, then this will happen to you. Number two, the Facebook post was real. Just a week after I ignored it, I failed my logic test. The Facebook post was real. Just a week after I ignored it, I failed my logic test.
Post hoc,
ergo propter hoc, assuming sequence and time implies cause and effect. So in this particular one, the Facebook post was real. A week ago, the person ignored it, and now they failed the test. So are they making a false connection in time, assuming sequence and time is related? So, yes. Number three, my girlfriend always shares posts. She says that nobody has to prove to her that they don't really work. My girlfriend always shares posts. She says that nobody has to prove to her that they don't really work. What is the fallacy?
I'm going to say the key says that it's ad ignoritanium. Lack of what?
What is she even saying? What post? What, like, read the statement. My girlfriend always shares posts. She says that nobody has to prove to her that they don't really work. Huh?
Well, I'm assuming she was a manager and she could obviously see what people were saying.
Okay, but that's a good point, right? Because what is important to do is not to read into it, not to read into it more than what it actually what?
Says.
And we all have a tendency to do this from time to time. Somebody says something and we either fill in the blank ourselves with our own assumptions or we're just not clear. So I would say this really doesn't make any sense. Like, I mean, I'm actually, as I'm reading it, I'm like, geez, did I mess up that sentence too? But I checked it and I did it because the whole point is that it's ad ignorant, whatever. What is it again? Irritanium. Ignoritanium. Adamantus and glycan. Anyway, number four. A recycling poster said, recycle cans and waste paper. So I'm wasting paper every chance I get. Okay? What is number four?
Simplification. Okay, I got two different ones. Nate, what did you say?
That the confusing grammar leads to a false conclusion.
Yeah.
Vagueness, yeah.
Amphiboly, the vagueness in the grammar, I would agree.
That's amphiboly. Number five, all my friends recycle their cans, so it must be a good thing to do. All my friends recycle their cans, so it must be a good thing to do.
That is ad populum appeal to what?
All my friends are doing it. Okay. Number six, I read that life is either a daring adventure or nothing. My life certainly isn't a daring adventure, so I guess it's nothing.
Either or
fallacy, yes. Also known as false dilemma. Okay. Number seven. The Apostle Paul told us to honor our leaders, but he dishonored the high priest, so why should I listen to him?
A priorism.
Hasty generalization. Okay, everybody got a different one?
I put the first one.
Okay, maybe. So look at it closely. The Apostle Paul told us to honor our leaders, but he dishonored the high priest, so why should I listen to him? I think that's too quoque. You do it too. I don't have to listen to Paul when he tells me to honor my leaders because Paul dishonored his what? His leaders. Okay. Number eight. Honoring your leaders is an old tradition that no longer applies to our modern, sophisticated age. That's definitely chronological snobbery. Number nine, the Japanese always score higher in math than Americans. So I'm sure our Japanese neighbor can help you with your calculus. What's that?
Yeah, it's division. Division is transferring attributes from the whole to the part.
So because all the Japanese, at least in this argument, do good on math, your Japanese neighbor should be able to help you do well in calculus. Maybe that's true, maybe it's what? Maybe it's not. Number 10. The Japanese are better at math because they're smarter. We know that they're smarter because they always do better at math. That's circular reasoning, right? Remember, circular reasoning is assuming what you're trying to prove. Okay? Number 11. Hi, I'm selling tickets to the policeman's ball, and I'm sure you would like to support your local police. So how much would you like to give? What do we think number 11 is? I'll read it again. I'm selling tickets to the policeman's ball, and I'm sure you would like to support your local police, so how much would you like to give? I don't think it's a hasty generalization. I think it's a complex question. Question that excludes a legitimate response. Because if you look at the question, so how much can I... Notice the framing. I'm selling tickets to the policeman's ball, and I'm sure you would like to support your local police.
So generalizing that everybody wants to do that.
They're also generalizing. It could be both. So how much would you like to give? So if you say, I don't want to give anything, then what's the retort going to be? Well, you must be anti-cops or something like that, okay? So you're caught in the question that you can't really give a legitimate answer to, but I could see where you could, some of these could be maybe more than one. Number 12, of course the Joint Chiefs of Staff say we ought to increase military spending. As members of the armed forces, they want as much as they can get. Let me read it again. Of course, the Joint Chiefs of Staff say we ought to increase military spending. As members of the armed forces, they want as much as they can get. So maybe we didn't make it this far. Who made it to 12? Okay. What did you guys have for 12? So you had?
I had agnorama.
The key has bulbarism.
Yeah.
Genetic fallacy.
Why is it a fallacy?
Because the only reason that they want higher budget is because they're being paid by it, is the taxation. So the legitimate reason is they probably need better equipment, more men, whatever else. And I'm just saying that the only reason they want a higher budget is only because they want to pay themselves, because they're part of it. So because they're part of the military, it's self-serving is what my accusation is.
If you make that statement.
Right.
The first statement you made is a more charitable interpretation, right? That there might be other reasons that they might need higher military spending. 13. Which one? For 12? All right. How so? I see what you're saying, Amy, because the Joint Chiefs of Staff are part and increase as members of the armed forces. Okay.
Yeah,
we're worded
differently because
it's referring to the members of the armed forces, though it's only referring to the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yes, as members of the armed forces is related to the antecedent, which would have been the Joint Chiefs of Staff. All right, number 13. We shouldn't listen to Senator Slug either. Probably shouldn't listen to a guy named Senator Slug. But we shouldn't listen to Senator Slug either, since we all know he is a card-carrying member of the radical right.
Ad hominem.
It's definitely ad hominem attacking who? The person. Yeah, that doesn't happen ever. 14. Oh, so you believe in evolution? Tell me, are you descended from a monkey on your mother's side or your father's side?
Answer that right.
Either one could
be mad.
So I think this could be maybe two.
Complex.
It could be either or. And I think it probably is either or, and I think it could also be argued that it's also a complex question. Okay? Now, how would it be either or?
Because you're forcing someone to pick between two options. There could be others.
Yep. And it's a complex question in that the way it's worded. Okay?
Can it be taken as an attack on the person too?
Depending on how they say it, it sounds very sarcastic. So it kind of would be a slight insult.
So it could be a little ad hominem. Is that what you're saying, Amy?
Yeah.
Yeah. 15. The world was not created by God, for matter has always existed and thus needs no God to explain where it came from. I'll read it again. The world was not created by God, for matter has always existed and thus needs no God to explain where it came from.
It's circular reasoning.
That is circular reasoning. 16. The press has a duty to publish what is clearly in the public interest. And there is certainly public interest in the private life of the rich and famous. Read it again. The press has a duty to publish what is clearly in the public interest. And there is certainly public interest in the private life of the rich and famous.
Accent? Altered meaning through changed emphasis? Maybe that's not what the key said. Hasty generalization? They say it's equivocation. Confuse the real issue with multiple vague or unclear meanings.
I don't know if I necessarily...
We got no right to tell what they're putting there.
I don't know how they necessarily get that from the sample sentences, but we'll move on. 17. I had a bad time with my former husband. Trust me, dear, men are no good. Yes, a priorism, hasty generalization. I had one bad experience, therefore everything's bad.
Can that be composition?
How so?
Is he referring to one part?
Could be. I think some of these, I think, actually go together sometimes, right? Like, it's kind of a hasty generalization because you are identifying, like, you know, one part and then generalizing to the whole.
Right.
Nate?
So it's not quite the other because what you would find is an attribute that is true of all the parts. So, like we said, Adam is light. No matter what kind of Adam you're holding, they're all light. An elephant, therefore, must be light because it's made up of atoms. Right. There's a shared attribute of the parts that's not necessarily shared as a whole. But yeah, they do stack. Hasty would be a more particular.
So if this were, let me give you a sense of this as it seems to me. If this were like an SAT question, it would say, which of the following best explains the fallacy committed? So when you word it that way, are you admitting that you could maybe make an argument that it's more than one, but they'd be asking for like the best one? I'm not. They didn't obviously say that in their directions, but that's what this reminds me of with some of these.
You mean with a husband then?
Yeah.
Have enough information, but it could be the wife that's causing the spouse, or the husband, or both.
Right.
Right, but
hasty is the best.
That's why we're saying hasty generalization for the husband one. Right. You're generalizing based upon one experience with one person, and then extrapolating it to all men.
Right.
Is why it would be hasty generalization. Which one are we on? It says men are no good. So men would be men. If it said a man, that would be singular, but it says men, so it's generalizing it.
Yeah.
18. The idea of trying to colonize Mars is ridiculous. My mother said it couldn't possibly work.
Appealing to authority.
Ipsy Dixit, appeal to authority, yes. 19. Each snowflake is very light. There is no way that snow could make the roof collapse. Composition, part to whole, right? Okay. Obviously, it's true that each individual snowflake is very light, but you have the accumulative effect of all of them, and you can have a problem. 20. Did that last guy say that snowflakes were light? I've always thought that snow was frozen water. Did that last guy say that snowflakes were always light? I always thought that snow was frozen water. What do we think? Okay, why would it be equivocation, Eli?
Because they are assuming that light is like a source of light, like a light bulb, the sun, as opposed to light as a weight.
The answer they gave is equivocation. Okay. So, just a little exercise there for detecting the fallacies, and remember that when you're dealing with detecting it, you want to ask again the two questions. The two questions being, again, number one, all right, what is being argued? And number two, how is it being what? Argued.
Okay. But I think an important piece of you said was we don't read into it more than one study.
Yes, that's very important to not read into something more than what is actually being said. And that's not always easy to do, right? You read a piece, you read something, you listen to something, you watch a YouTube video, whatever, and you do have your own sets of preconceptions and biases that you bring to that. And so it's important to only deal with what are the arguments that are actually being made by what you're watching, reading, or listening to. Okay. Now, before we move on, does anybody have any comments or questions about that? Now, there are tests in the back of this book. Anyone want a test? I'm just joking.
No.
Yeah, I don't think I would even do really hot on the test with having to recall everything just off the top of my head. So this is something that you're going to have to practice, and the way you're going to get good at it is through practice, right? So I'm going to get out of that, and I want to bring up this, okay? This is a conversation that Nate and I were having about some issues related to AI, okay? And AI's ability, specifically what we were talking about or looking at here, is AI's ability to detect patterns in texts. Okay? So let me frame this for you. There is, if you've watched the YouTube channel, the Grace Life Bible Church YouTube channel at all, you know that Nate and I have recorded a series of videos related to numerology in King James Bible Defense, and the way people use numerology to try to argue for the King James Bible. Now, Nate and I are both King James Bible believers, but we reject the numerology that has been used by some parties to try to establish this, all right? Further, at the same time, there is also a guy online who we have also addressed on the YouTube channel who is arguing that the Apocrypha is inspired, okay? So why this is important or unique is because both of these individuals have recently, in the last 2 months, they have both released videos where they have basically had discussions or conversations with AI regarding their unique views. Okay? So the one guy records a conversation of him talking to AI about the Apocrypha being inspired. Okay? And of course, he claims that he wins the debate with the AI because he convinces the AI that the Apocrypha is scripture. Okay? The second guy, who is the numerology guy, he subjects all these numerological patterns to AI to ask AI if these numerological patterns are unique to the King James Bible, therefore proving the inspiration of the King James Bible. And what's interesting is, the first guy views the Apocrypha as scripture. He has the appropriate discussion with AI along those lines. The second guy using AI does not believe that the Apocrypha is scripture. Okay? So, where this gets interesting, at least to me, is you have two people who are using AI to try to justify some theological suppositions that they are believers in, and so they are now subjecting this to AI. Okay? So, I asked AI some questions. Okay? So, here's what I said. Can AI detect patterns on its own? That's what I asked. Okay? And this is what it said. So, this is the Copilot AI that comes with my tablet. Yes, but with important caveats. Here's a breakdown. Okay? So, textual analysis at scale. AI can scan the entire King James Bible or any version and count word frequencies, positions, and patterns. It can identify repetitions, numerological alignments like this is one of the ones that's a big deal somehow. You know, 343 is 7 to the third power. 7 is the number of perfection. 7 cubed equals this, so that means something now, okay? And cross-reference the terms according to books. Pattern discovery, okay? With the right prompts or goals. See, that's the big deal, right? With the right prompts or goals, example, find all instances where word counts align with multiples of 7. Will AI find that on its own unless you tell it to look for it? No. If you tell it to look for it, can it find it? So, the AI then is only as intelligent as the questions that are being what? Asked. Okay? So to say that AI proves something is, to me, a really big problem, because AI is just going to respond to whatever series of prompts anybody subjects to AI. Okay? Cross-translation comparison, then it kind of gives like what AI can help with. Avoiding cherry-picking. Without constraints, AI might find many patterns, some coincidental. Human guidance helps filters out noise and focus on patterns with theological or textual relevance. What does that mean? That means that the person that is inputting the question, do they have the ability to influence what the AI looks for? Okay? So it's cherry picking for me to select a certain sequence of numbers, a certain that I have already predetermined on my own mean something, and then put them into AI and then say, find me the, outcomes sesame at the other end, and it just proves what I already have determined that it means. Okay? So I asked it some other questions. Nate, if you want to jump in here at any point, let me know. So I asked a follow-up here. I said, most patterns were selectively fed to the AI by the speaker, meaning they were already identified and prescribed for and presented for evaluation. The AI contributed by critically analyzing the patterns, asking clarifying questions and highlighting, okay? So then I asked a question, it says...
That was a great follow-up, Brian.
You're so brilliant.
Okay. To clarify, these 40 patterns weren't independently discovered by AI from scratch. All right? Instead, they were responses, reflections, or extensions based on 66 patterns that were selectively fed into the conversation by who? So, for a speaker to say, I gave AI these 66 numerological patterns, and the AI confirmed that this is proof of something, is that a logical fallacy? I think it's a logical fallacy. Possibly multiple logical fallacies going on here, okay? So, what do you guys think the problems are with this?
Artificial intelligence is artificial.
So your point there, Amy, is what? I think I know your point, but...
I don't feel like it's always trustworthy.
No, you should not trust it unequivocally, right?
No.
I mean, there's certain things it's good for, but and maybe even you could argue helpful for, but not for stuff like this, Nate.
Well, the use of AI is inherently question-making, because I'm already coming with my conclusion, and all I'm looking for is it to confirm my thought. And it doesn't even need to confirm my conclusion. So if I've already decided if these patterns exist, then they mean this conclusion. These patterns exist, therefore my conclusion. Then
yeah.
It's just question banking, because I've already put in biased data. And every AI is different. If you use any different AI platform, they have access to different material, which is going to skew their data one way or another, based on what... queries you put in, it's going to skew the data one way or another.
Yeah.
And so, we used to know this with, like, Google search. Everybody knew that, like, if you just type in something to Google, you'll find an article that agrees with you no matter what your position is. And we But people still have to recognize that there are limitations, and yeah, you have to understand that everyone is using it to quote unquote prove themselves right. And if it proves everyone right, then
so
right.
I asked it a follow-up then. Did AI pick up on the 40 patterns because of what was selectively fed into it? Yes. Those 40 patterns are AI-generated insights that were triggered by the 66 selectively fed patterns. They were not original discoveries, but rather analytical reactions to the data provided. Again, exactly right, Brian. AI could not have found these specific patterns without being directly prompted by the speaker. And that's the point, right? So, if somebody's going to use AI, the same person that was using AI to justify the numerical patterns would look to the guy who's using AI to justify the inspiration of the Apocrypha as being illegitimate because he doesn't believe the Apocrypha is what? Inspired. But are both using the same tool in an attempt to try to justify their own hobby horses. Okay? So it seems to me that this was an example of something that's happening in real time related to these fallacies that we've been talking about over the last few weeks. Okay? So
it's also a false cause, right? So each of these guys feed in these patterns, and AI might confirm this particular pattern exists or doesn't exist. Okay? It's just unbiased. It's just going to say yes, it does, no, it doesn't. But the leap from this pattern therefore means my conclusion is not a causal link necessarily. That's the whole point. Like you're in my discussion on this is that there is no, even if these patterns are real, they don't automatically mean the conclusion. Like you have to build out some proof that shows from point A to B that these patterns actually mean something worth looking into.
So the patterns are cherry picked by the human that then presents him to the AI. And then the AI confirms, oh yes, you have the pattern. Well, that...
Great.
Well, okay. What
pattern, great.
What does that mean? Okay. I said, could AI find patterns like this on its own? Yes, but only if it is given the entire biblical text. It is told to look for numerical or symbolic patterns. It is guided to prioritize certain themes. So in other words, it's not just going to do this unless the person is what? Telling it to. So we got to be careful with this kind of stuff, right? And so he's going to say, well, you're using an AI right now.
That's the point, though.
That's the point of what I'm trying to point out. I'm asking AI about AI's ability to analyze numerical what? Patterns, and AI itself is saying that it can find patterns, but it only will find what the presenter presents as a pattern to what? Find. Otherwise, it's searching for a needle in a haystack.
So even if you are committing some sort of too cold way, it's still pertinent because it's proving now you right, now as a third person. So
yep.
Three people who all disagree are proven right by AI, which proves that AI is not trustworthy as a ultimate source of truth.
Right, which proves that AI cannot prove the inspiration or lack thereof of the Apocrypha, nor is it good evidence to prove numerical patterns in the King James Bible. You guys following why I brought this up and why I'm using this as an example? Yeah, it's proving the bias of the questions. Okay? And I subjected transcripts to AI for both of these two videos, and I asked it a series of questions regarding it, and AI, and it's the same thing for me. I already surmised what it was going to tell me. It was going to tell me that it could only find the patterns if it was guided to find them. And sure enough, what did it tell me? It told me it could only find the patterns if it was guided to what? Find them. So to make a video that argues for either one of these, the inspiration of the Apocrypha or the numerology using AI as evidence, is totally unconvincing to me. Okay? Just as a matter of argumentation. But it's 10 o'clock, we're past time. Next Sunday we'll look at some things related to straw man arguments related to dispensationalism. Okay? So